Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 440th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me over at Once a Metro and the rest of the SB Nation soccer family of websites. Chat room is open. You can talk amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my ability. As we move on, pardon me, get ready for an off-season of intrigue, an off-season of interesting rumors, and other things that you ask yourself, is this true? Is this just a rumor? What is it about these articles and these stories in the off-season that is truly, truly a real story or not? So we'll have to wait and see. But first things first, as we have already discussed with Guillermo Rivera from Fire Confidential as well as The Athletic in Chicago, that the new ownership group, the new owners of the Chicago Fire, they wanted to change things up. They wanted to change a lot of things up, make it look and feel like it's a brand new era of Chicago Fire soccer. Obviously, you know, the four Open Cup titles, the 1998 MLS Cup Championship, that double year in 1998 that was won. It's a situation where you would like to think that this man coming in wanted to make every single Chicago Fire supporter feel that they are basically, it's a brand new era of the club. It's a brand new era for the future of the club. And, you know, why not? The old ownership has come and gone, and all you can say is that everything is, you know, a clean slate. They're going to move out of SeatGeek Stadium in Bridgeview, and, you know, brand new time, brand new era, going back to Soldier Field in downtown Chicago. And, you know, for now, it's just a temporary movement until they, I guess they're going to start looking to build a brand new stadium in downtown Chicago and make the Fire what it should have been in a very, very long time, that's coming into something that's very important, not just with the White Sox and the Cubs and the Blackhawks and the Bulls and the Bears, but now you're going to have the Fire now feeling more important as well. Well, brand new era of Chicago Fire soccer comes into play. So that means one thing and one thing only. We are going to see a rebrand of the crest. And that's supposed to be an exciting time. That's supposed to be an exciting time. Brand new era of Chicago Fire soccer. Brand new everything. And once again, it's a situation where you feel like, you know, what can go wrong? What can go wrong? Why should it go wrong? We got a brand new owner, we got a brand new direction. Now it's time to go out and get ready for preseason. Of course, you know, everyone takes a break. Get ready for preseason. and then move on forward, and let's see what happens here. You know, let's go for it. Let's go for it. Why not? Give it a shot, and let's see what this whole thing can do. When you're repurposing, you know, the crest, you believe that, you know, okay, they're going to either change things up and make it a little bit better, or you're going to incorporate some of the old stuff and put it into the new stuff.
Well,
ladies and gentlemen, whoever the Chicago Fire have brought over or to hire to repurpose, redraw, recreate that new crest, and I know that there's been a lot of talk about it. There's been a lot of discussion about it from people outside of the organization, outside of the club. But you know, when you took a look at this, how can I say this without really insulting? I don't want to be insulting, but the truth is that I can draw that up better, or actually I can draw that up the same way that this group did. Let's just put it this way, because I will say this right now: it looks like crap. I think that I really believe that is as gently as you can say it, as kind as you can say it, without really, you know, having a situation where, you know, you're insulting people. But the truth is, it's not good. And seeing this article here from the Chicago Tribune, let me just say this right now. And this is by Jeremy Mikula. And I mean, I'm looking at it. I can do this. I can draw this. You know? Maybe I need a ruler to, you know, make sure it's all proportionate. But the truth is, I can do this. Claiming about, you know, the people who worked on it, the old crest was a fire department, like blue, red, and gray, floral, Florian cross with a stylized C encircled in the middle and Chicago and fire inside the cross. The new crest is a dark blue oval with two sets of three triangles, one gold, one red, divided by a line. Chicago appears at the top and fire FC at the bottom. And obviously the name of the club was named after the great Chicago Fire that destroyed the city. They devastated the city, but of course they rebuilt it. And, you know, Chicago, once again, of course, everything's fine. But, you know, it says nothing. It just says that a 12-year-old can draw this. Even a 5-year-old can draw this. This reminds me of the time where I went to the Museum of Modern Art in Manhattan, in New York City. And I've never been to the MoMA. I've never been to any MoMA. And I will say that, you know, there are certain things in there that I believe deserve to be in the museum. But there are certain things that was in there that did not deserve to be in the museum. And here is the – by the way, just to let everybody know, the Andy Warhol painting and the Campbell soup can paintings, that belongs into – the Museum of Modern Art. Because why? Because you've got to be that talented and that good to really not only do a self-portrait of yourself in different colors, but the truth is that, you know, if you paint the exact printing of the can of soup and do that on a canvas, you know, to me, you know, that's a really talented gift. But here's one where I did not like it. And this is a big white canvas, big canvas painted in white. And I swear to God, this is what I saw, and it really, really ticked me off. You saw on the far left side of the canvas a very large and thick single stripe going up and down in red. And then at the very bottom of the canvas, going across from left to right, are 3 to 4 thin black hoops going across the bottom of the canvas. And the rest was nothing. Absolutely nothing. That is where I wanted to go to the management. I wanted to show them that painting, and I want to tell them I'd like to have my money back. Because something so simple that I can do myself, something that you guys can do yourself, and you're saying this belongs in a museum? Just like this brand new Chicago Fire shield, this brand new shield, crest, whatever you want to call it, you look at it and you say to yourself, how much money did you put into this group, this design group, and you came out with that? I'd like to have my money back. Or how about this? How about you give me the money? I'll commission a brand new shield for you for the Chicago Fire, and I'll make it 10 million times better than what this one looks like. I mean, I saw that, and I said to myself, what? Excuse me? This? What in the hell is going on in Chicago? But I will say this. I only hope and pray that Chicago Fire, with their brand new shield, will try and do their best to have this situation done, because it's just ridiculous. And I hope it works for them, because I'm telling you right now, in my eyes, this is the biggest joke I've ever seen in the history of either logos or crests involved in sports. That is just absolutely horrendous, especially to the history of championships the Chicago Fire has won in the Open Cup and, of course, in the MLS Cup. Ladies and gentlemen, great show for you tonight. I will have on Mr. Wes Bowling talking about Nashville SC and the expansion that they went through. Recapping the final round of qualifying in the 2020 U.S. Open Cup. But first things first, and let's not forget, for Red Bull supporters, my take on the roster moves by the club before we get into the 2020 preseason. But first things first, Claudio Reyna, the sporting director of New York City FC, has now left the club, and he will be now the sporting director for Austin FC as they will expand into the 2021 season. To talk about that recorded interview with the one and only Michael Landerer of Blue City Radio that covers New York City FC. Here is Michael Landerer right now.
Daniel Feuerstein here, the American Soccer Show, as we continue to talk about the world of American soccer here on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. Talking to me right now, of course, he runs Blue City Radio about New York City FC. The one and only Michael Ander joins me. Michael, welcome back to the show, and how are things?
Dan, thanks again for having me. Things are good. It's a tumultuous off season for both local teams, as I think it's a competition to see who can do the most to upset their fan base in the 2 months of off season for MLS clubs.
It feels like Petke Lampard Part 2, doesn't it?
That's probably a good place to put it. But, you know, I was thinking about the Petke firing and all the chaos that happened in Red Bull country. When was that? 3 years ago?
Something like that.
And it's the exact same way. You know, here we are. It's NYCFC is, you know, looking at a upcoming CCL, you know, competition. You know, they'll find out their schedule in a few weeks, and when the draw happens in early December, and they have no head coach, and they have no, they have a new sporting director, but it's it was a technical director, a guy who was promoted from the inside, and it's a guy who goes back to the Jason Christ days.
Absolutely, and that's what we're going to talk about. Obviously, we know that Domi Toron is no longer the head coach of the New York City FC, and now Claudio Reyna, the former U.S. men's national team attacking mid, playmaking mid as well, who was the sporting director, the first sporting director in the history of New York City FC, is now, or has now, left the club and now has joined expansion side Austin FC to begin the 2021 season of Major League Soccer. To talk about Claudio, you know, this man is a legend of the game in the United States. Of course, he's the one that, you know, once Tab Ramos retired from the national team, he took over Tab's position as head, as the attacking mid, or at least a creative midfielder for the U.S. national team. And now we're seeing Claudio leaving NYCFC to join Austin FC. Where do you think Claudio just decided to say, you know what, I think I'm just going to go and sign somewhere else? Or do you think maybe Austin gave him a sweet deal to come over and you know, start building something special down in the capital state of the capital city of Texas?
Well, so Claudio was the first ever employee of the team. That was one of the things that was, you know, you have to remember, he was there for the announcement of the franchise, and he was you know, he was there to from day one. And I think that's the positive side of it, that people liked his you know, his familiarity. He obviously has a very good soccer mind, and he did a lot of work. The I think the reason, if I could project the reason why he left, is because I think it was very unclear. I think it is still unclear, you know, who really pulls the strings for NYCFC, and who has the ultimate power. We saw this in an article that came out before Domi had left. But it was one of the things that was helping stoke the flames to get people ready for the announcement of his departure. And it was the fact that when they were looking for a striker to start the 2019 season, they had a list of players, and the striker that they ended up signing in a bear from Brazil, he was the ninth guy on the list. So they had gone through eight other players that Torrent or Reyna had targeted, but they just could not get the deals done on those first players. And they ended up signing Hebert, who did very well for the team. So, you know, there's no loss of appreciation for what he did. But it is interesting to see how long it took and all the hurdles that they had to jump through. So I think that's why Reyna probably went to Nashville, because I think he realizes that he's going to be just given a budget. And as long as he stays within the budget, he's going to have a lot more authority to build the team the way he wants to.
Really quickly, this is the quote from Claudio Reyna. As he said, after five seasons as a sporting director for New York City FC, I've decided to accept the exciting opportunity to once again be part of an expansion club. This has been an extremely difficult decision for me and my family. NYCFC is such a special place, and being sporting director of this great club has been one of the most enjoyable and proud moments in my career. And, of course, as you said, David Lee, who was the technical director, is now going to take over as sporting director. You know, what did Claudio do, I guess, to be so special for this club that he was able to do things, you know, 5-6 years? The first year was basically trying to get all their ducks in a row, and then, of course, the opening year in 2015 to, you know, move forward and try to, you know, make this club something special, not just within the New York City area, but, of course, you know, in the league and MLS as a whole.
I think the part that most people will go to when they think about the success of Reyna is they'll go to the academy. And obviously there was a little bit of a sticky situation with his son, Gio, and that transfer to Dortmund, or the son, not even a transfer, the son just signing with Dortmund, I guess for their U-19s. But it still goes to say that Reyna did a very good job in helping build that academy, and it was his philosophies. I mean, it was one of the reasons why people were talking to him when the U.S. Men's National Team vacancy was there about his philosophy of development that really helped the academy kids be such a focal part of the structure of the club. Now, again, the only player that we can really look at that has delivered for the first team is James Sand. We also had Justin Hack and Joe Scally, signed with the team, but neither of them got MLS minutes limited MLS minutes. But it's the fact that you see a player like Joe Scally now starting with Gladbach in the Bundesliga. So I think that's where people are going to say that's the part that I can look at and say, yeah, Claudio was responsible for that, and he helped build a strong academy structure, and a structure that'll continue even in his absence.
So moving forward now, David Lee now will be the sporting director for the club, formerly the technical director. What is it about David that you think is either an upgrade to Claudio or maybe it's a step back, depending on what you've seen from him at with the club?
I think we're gonna have to give him some time. I don't know what his responsibilities were in the role of technical director. It was one, again, it goes back to one of the reasons why I think Claudio left. I don't know that he had the authority that he wanted. So it'll be interesting to see what role Lee plays in signing players. I think for the most part, I think CFG, the parent company that owns Man City and NYCFC, I think they have their scouting network in place. I think they target the players and look at the ones that they want to sign. And I think Lee's role is really to navigate the MLS salary structure and to understand which deals make the most sense. You can look at I know one of the quotes that made people upset about Lee being in his role was he had gone on record talking about a player that was with NYCFC for only one season at Joinga Berget, and how he praised Joinga when he came over from Sweden, from Malmo. And he ended up being a failure and only lasted the one season. So again, we have to see what types of players he brings in, how the roster is built, and really, again, talking about this issue with the upcoming Champions League team, how the depth is built, because you're going to need a full roster of 25 players to navigate the Champions League run if they advance through the first round.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what happens there. And, as you said, there is some uncertainty with who's going to be the manager, the head coach of the club, but at least making the change at sporting director was very quick and very easy for the club, and we'll see what happens. So this will be your first time, as you cover New York City FC, to see CONCACAF Champions League action. And I guess the big question is, you've been saying, who will be the manager, and where will you be playing the home matches? I know Yankee Stadium, they won't have to worry about the Yankees. They'll be in down in Tampa for spring training in February, March. But the big question is, what's it going to look like when this CONCACAF Champions League run starts, Michael?
Well, I think we got to start with the question of manager. And Giovanni Van Bronckhorst has been the much rumored replacement for Domi Torrent, and he was with the team. He obviously had spent some time with CFG in 2019. He had been at training a couple of times in upstate New York in Orangeburg, where NYCFC trains, and he had attended a couple of the NYCFC matches. I personally don't remember seeing him, but then again, I don't know that I wouldn't recognize him. And usually the media are one side of the training field and guests of the team are on the opposite side, so it would have been hard for me to pick him out. The problem that I see with signing Van Bronckhorst is what happened with Reyna. I think Van Bronckhorst, one of the lures of the position was the fact that he had such a very close relationship with Claudio, and there was even speculation that Claudio's oldest son, Gio, was named after Van Bronckhorst. They spent time together playing in Scotland, and it was they were you know two of the two guys that found, forged that relationship back then that had continued to this day. It's one of the reasons why I don't think the announcement has been made. I think people thought that it was going to be made very very quickly after the after Torrent had left, but I don't think that they were I think they were kind of blindsided by Reina's decision to leave and head to Austin. So that being said, I think that's the first thing that NYCFC has to sort out. I can't tell you what it's going to look like on the field. I mean, I think on the positive side, they've only lost one starter. They lost Keaton Parks from his loan to back to Benfica in Portugal. Again, playing for their B squad, but we'll have to see. It doesn't sound like their Portugal is going to lend him back out. So he's the only starter that the team loses. I think from that perspective, I think the team should be pretty strong, and I think they'll be ready. I mean, we also have to consider the potential of a work stoppage. I know NYCFC goalkeeper Brad Stuver did an interview with Glenn Crooks where they talked about the possibility of a work stoppage, and if the work stoppage occurs, even though CCL is outside of MLS structure, I think the players have all agreed that if there's a work stoppage, they're going to cease all work, even Champions League.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah, that's going to be the big pressing issue to see, can they get that deal done before January 10th when teams are supposed to report for preseason training. We will see. And then the last piece of it is, I honestly don't know where they're going to play these games. It is a shame that NYCFC is still in this situation. We've heard a lot of speculation, a lot more speculation of the site in the Bronx being approved, but it's still a long way. It's still long enough away that they haven't made an announcement, and that's troubling. So I'm gonna guess they go back to I think Belsen has been ruled out. I think someone had told me that that was not an option.
Oh no, that's definitely not an option. No, that's definitely not an option.
Yeah, I don't know where they go.
See, once again, and like I've said before, Michael, I mean nothing against City Football Group and at the same time against the Yankees, but the truth is that Don Garber basically begged to get a second New York City team, and it has done wonders for this rivalry right now, but the truth is it's still, shall we say, a proper stadium is still a deterrent that it has not been built, and at the same time, we don't know if it'll ever be built, because if you look at the LA rivalry, at least Bank of California was built before the club began, and I think that's the one thing that's been missing here. Once again, I'm not saying that it's typical New York City politics that it's not getting the job done, but at the same time, it just sounds like to me that people are scoffing at the idea of building a soccer stadium for this club. And I know they want to still be in the Bronx, they still want to be connected to the Bronx, but trying to get that land from the GAL Corporation, I'm sorry. I just don't see it happening there. I'm not saying I don't want it to happen, but I just can't see it happening there.
Well, I mean, from an NYCFC perspective, we've got to hope it happens, because I think that's the best location as far as, or it's the location that could probably be, developed quicker than anything else. Anything in the city is going to take time, but I think of the other possibilities that I've heard, I think that's the one that's the closest to actually being, executable. Going back to Reina, I think that's one of the issues. So the stadium is a big issue with NYCFC, not only for the first team, but also because it affected the possibility of NYCFC developing a women's team to play in the NWSL, but also it hindered their ability to develop a USL squad, which would have given some of their bench players, some of their reserve players, opportunity to get minutes. The academy kids, the homegrown signings had the benefit to where they were young enough they could go back and play games with the U19 squad. But there was a lot of guys that have lost competitive years because they signed with NYCFC and there were no games to play. I think of a player like Juan Pablo Torres, who was a constant call-up for the U-23s for the U.S. men, and very rarely saw minutes for NYCFC.
And that's the shame of it. And you have to probably hope when Queensborough FC gets open. I mean, I know, we don't know if David Villa will agree to be either the USL club for NYCFC or he'll allow some of the players to get minutes there in USL action. But that's another story for another time. But we'll see what happens. And hopefully for New York City FC, they finally get that stadium. And at the same time, let's hope that David Lee will be the man that can either make things better or be at the same level that Reina had it for the club. Michael, thanks again for your time, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Oh, thanks, Dan. It was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Michael Anderer from Blue City Radio recording this interview with me on the show. And, very intriguing stuff going on with the club, and especially Claudio Reina now heading over to Austin, Texas to be a part of Austin FC. Speaking about those expansion teams, joining me right now to talk about the expansion of Nashville SC coming from USL Championship and next season beginning in Major League Soccer. Of course, why not? The radio voice of Nashville SC during the USL days, and hopefully he will be moving on to the MLS days, the one and only Wes Bowling. Wes, how are you? Good evening, and how are things down in Music City?
I am great. Things are beautiful. Just finished up a lovely dinner on a chilly fall night at Nashville. It's funny, we caught up last year about U.S. Open Cup, and that's a tournament that will continue to be near and dear to my heart, and I know to yours. It's crazy now to think that we were talking about Nashville beating these NPSL clubs, and now they're headed to the top flight. It's been a really fun ascension to follow.
That's because you'll be in the later round. That's why.
That's right. Yes, indeed. Don't have to fight our way to those. We'll start there. It's going to be a nice luxury for the clubs.
That's right, and don't you forget it. But anyway, Nashville officially ending their USL championship season around October, beginning of November, around that time. And now you're looking forward to seeing, what you're going to do in MLS first year. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but with you and Inter Miami coming in next season, I know Miami's going to be in the Eastern Conference. Will Nashville begin in the West?
I don't have that answer. I have heard that speculation. There was a fan who posted a screenshot here recently of somebody's website that had Nashville listed in the East. I don't think it was anything official. Pardon the sirens going past me here. I think the West is the place to be. It makes sense from a scheduling standpoint. You know, if you're going to move a team too, you're not going to want to move a Chicago for 1 or 2 years, until Austin comes in. So I think we'll see Nashville probably temporarily start there. And I think folks in Nashville are pretty excited about that possibility, to be honest with you. I mean, they know now that Atlanta's coming to town to open the season in 2020. So that's going to be a coup either way, regardless of conference. The Cincy rivalry is going to be hot. But, to have the likes of Carlos Vela coming to town, guaranteed if you're in the Western Conference. Seattle Sounders, the MLS Cup champions. I think there's a lot of enthusiasm around that. But, no, I don't have confirmation of that, just a suspicion that's going to end up being the case.
Probably so. And I was thinking because, once that, the league probably wants even amount of teams in both conferences, and then, when the next round of those expansion teams do come in, like Austin will, then my opinion would be then Nashville in 2021 moves to the East. And then you'll have Austin coming in, and I believe either I'm trying to remember, St. Louis will also move in 2021. Probably not, but then again, they'll probably move to the West, and you'll see Nashville going to the East in 2021. But that's just my speculation, of course. I have no confirmation either, so I don't want to make people believe it's confirmation.
Well, when I go to a brewery and I don't know what to get, I love to get the flight, right, and try 4 or 5 different things and then settle in. If that is the case, if Nashville starts in the West and then gets to move, they get a nice tasting flight of MLS, right? They get different grounds to go to, different teams coming in. So I think it's really an optimal situation if that ends up being the way it works out.
Absolutely. And, of course, what other moment does a expansion team get when they come into MLS and get ready for next season for their very first year? You go through the expansion draft. Now, want to talk about some of these players and, of course, some of the other players that they did sign, we all know of. But you know, the first player drafted by Nashville was Abu Dinladi, forward from Minnesota United. Why Dinladi? What made him so interesting for the ownership group to, and even the coaching staff, to bring this guy over to be your first ever expansion draft pick?
It's a good question. I think the club is really sold on his potential. Obviously, the results have not been there the last couple of years, but Mike Jacobs is as plugged into this league as anybody you're going to see, as scouts who have been just combing this league and spent their full-time gig really, you know, for a year to be building this roster while he's been kind of managing both USL and MLS. I think they see his raw scoring ability, his speed, and they look back to that rookie year when he scored 8 goals, and they say, man, if he can regain that form with a guy like Hani Mukhtar underneath him, a world-class European number 10, you know, perhaps the players around him will fuel a return to that kind of result that he showed in his rookie year when he was pushing guys like Julian Gressel for that Rookie of the Year honor.
No, absolutely. That'd be very interesting to see how well he's going to work for Nashville next year. You did draft Zarek Valentin from Portland, but then all of a sudden they turned it around and made it with a trade with the Houston Dynamo for goalkeeper Joe Willis. Do you feel Gary Smith, who will remain as your manager in the MLS, of course, he won the Colorado Rapids, the MLS Cup Championships about 5-6 years ago. Did you feel that they really needed a goalkeeper to go forward into the expansion season?
I think so. I think you look at the way that Gary built the USL club, and it's a different level, obviously, but maybe a similar experience in how he builds an expansion group. And he started at goal, really, with Matt Pickens in that case, and built his way forward. So I was actually quite surprised when Nashville did not initially take a keeper in the expansion draft. If you'll recall, the trade was announced right after the draft. And so at that point, you know, you said, okay, I get it. I thought Tyler Miller was that first pick, quite honestly, from LA. And then when Lee Wynn went a couple picks later, obviously he was off the table. And I think at that point the club said, all right, if you don't have an elite keeper, I don't think Miller's elite either, he's certainly solid, but if you don't have one of these top two or three keepers in the league, let's get somebody that we don't have to worry about. And I think Joe Willis is that. He's a guy who's a veteran. He's certainly a great locker room presence. He's had plenty of experience this past year in Houston. He's played more than he's played his entire career. And I think, you know, I'm not surprised at all that they'd want to build from the back in that case. And I think Joe Willis is a good choice to bring in to establish a solid veteran presence in that.
Yeah, I agree with you there as well. Joe Willis has been a solid goalkeeper in his years growing up through the DC United system. And then, of course, Houston Dynamo getting him in the reentry draft and being a solid goalkeeper for the last couple of years. Jahlil Anibaba, you might say he's a journeyman throughout the league, Chicago, Seattle. Just recently, of course, was with the New England Revolution, drafted. Feeling confident about getting a defender like Anibaba to go out there and to, you know, at least lead the back line against the oppositions in MLS?
Sure. I think he's a pick. He's a classic expansion pick. He's not going to turn many heads, but a lot of people are going to nod heads and say, okay, I get it. You know, and he could end up even being a depth pick. He might not start consistently. We don't know that. But I think he, at the very least, is a fringe starter. And if he ends up being your guy on day one, you don't mind that. And he's a locker room guy again. And in talking with Gary Smith, we spoke a little bit. Yeah, I put the microphone down and we just chatted for a sec before recording an interview. And he said, I really like his dependability. Great locker room guy. Really glad we were able to get him. And I think you've seen that in other places as well with this club. They're building around veterans. I think, you know, there are a couple ways to do that. A guy like Fernando Adi in Cincinnati a year ago was a veteran who clearly didn't have a whole lot of tread left on the tires. I think what Nashville is doing is getting veterans who are great locker room presences and still can play. You look at Dax McCarty as another example of that. Joe Willis, as we've mentioned. I think Jahlil Anibaba fits that template as well.
And, of course, originally drafted Brandon Vasquez from Atlanta United, but then traded to FC Cincinnati for TAM, $150,000 of it. What do you think Nashville is looking for with that TAM money? Probably someone from their USL side coming up to MLS, or you think they're going to try and get somebody you know, like maybe a big deal for a designated player to come in?
Well, they ended up turning around a lot of that TAM in the Joe Willis deal and in the Adrian Zendejas deal, the backup keeper they got, who they really like down the road. So I think some of that TAM went straight toward that. It was almost kind of, you know, making a swap for a swap there. I do think Brandon Vasquez would have looked pretty good in gold. It would have been a good fit for this franchise. I definitely understand why Cincinnati needed him and needed the potential and possibly the goals that he provides. But, yeah, I think, you know, in general, the club's approach with its TAM is going to be, I think, probably similar to what Sporting Kansas City has done over the years, building a deep, strong roster of those number 4 through number 10 guys you can buy down with TAM and don't have to be DPs, maybe even 3 through 10. They might not use all those DP spots, but I think they're going to use that TAM to assemble a roster and to fund a roster that's going to have a nice backbone starting this year and moving into the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, Jimmy Miranda, the defender from Sporting Kansas City. Like, if you get a good defender like that coming from Peter Vermes' tutelage at Sporting Kansas City, you know, you're doing something right here. And why not go after a guy that's done well for Vermes over in the Midwest?
And that's the other piece. People looked at that $125,000 investment in TAM for a backup keeper in Zendejas, and they said, what in the world? But part of that deal, as has been reported elsewhere by my friends at Speedway Soccer Pod and elsewhere, is that sum is what allowed Sporting Kansas City to make Madronda available. So, you know, it wasn't a straight-up trade necessarily. It's one of those expansion deals you see. They love Madronda. They really like what he brings to the table. Gary Smith's biggest dilemma, he told me, was where do we play him? You know, he can be fine in the center back role. We can play him in midfield. We can play him in left midfield. So there's a wealth of options. And Gary said, my job as the coach, of course, is to figure out where he fits best and give him that job and not bounce him around. But I think they really appreciate what that versatility means, especially as an expansion club who's going to need to rotate, you know, who's going to have to deal with probably some adversity at some point. A lot of veterans, you hope somebody doesn't get hurt, but certainly that's always in the cards. Somebody's going to. I think Madronda provides depth, but also, you know, starting capability from day one for this club.
You know, I got to say this, and, you know, some of the moves that Nashville has done has been pretty, pretty interesting. Obviously, Daniel Lovett's coming over from Montreal in a deal, you know, who just finished up being a part of the U.S. men's national team during the CONCACAF Nations League matches against Canada and at Cuba. Dax McCarty, you'll never get a finer defensive midfielder who had some attacking prowess as well. He's definitely going to be your heart and soul in that midfield. But you know what? Here's the one player I think that's been very, very telling of what they believe in and at the same time who they wanted to bring over from the USL level, and that's Cameron Lancaster. I mean, you've seen it with him winning 2 consecutive USL Cup championships with Louisville City, who just lost to Real Monarchs in the USL Championship League final. What's so special about Cameron Lancaster for those of you that do not, or for those listeners that don't really pay attention to the USL level? You know, what has he done to really put a stamp to give him this opportunity to come into the MLS club?
Well, 2 years ago, he won the Golden Boot in Louisville, and that made this club fall in love with him. Unfortunately, he didn't play a whole lot in 2019 because of injury, and that's been an issue for him various years throughout his career. What the club loves about him, though, when he's healthy, is he plays great work rate. He's not as physically polished as a guy like Daniel Rios, one of the other USL guys they're bringing up, who was second in the Golden Boot race this year in the league. But the Cam displays excellent savvy positioning, and when he gets the ball anywhere near the box, he is deadly. You know, the word poacher is kind of a dirty word, but he's a poacher that can also create, and I think that's what they absolutely love about him. The question is, will he be healthy? You know, he's not going to be as physically stout as most of the guys he's going up against, certainly not the center backs in MLS. But I think the club sees that he's crafty enough and resourceful enough to create opportunities. And that's a microcosm of what this club wants to do. They know that they're not going to have an MLS All-Star squad on the field in year one. But I think they are putting the pieces together to be competitive and to be fun to watch. And I think Cam Lancaster is one of those pieces, even if it's in a reserve role, who can come into the 75th and make opponents' eyes wide. Like, oh, man, this is what they're bringing on. We can't sleep on these guys.
No, you really can't. And that's the one thing about some of these players that are coming up from the USL, especially a guy like Lancaster. He's shifty. He's very quirky. And at the same time, he'll find a way to sneak in and probably go back post and beat your keeper really badly.
Yeah, he's great. And he's a good complement to a guy like Daniel Rios, who scored 21 goals this year in USL. He's the only player in USL history to score 20-plus goals two consecutive years. And he's more of a prototypical striker. He's big. He's savvy. He's got a strong right foot. He can go both feet, though. So I think between the two of them, you know, this wasn't going to be an FC Cincinnati last year where you bring up 11 guys from USL. But I think those couple guys, they signed up to MLS contracts last year for a reason. They did not see those guys as USL assets. They saw them as MLS assets that they wanted to have their eye on for a year. And I think they're pretty excited about what those two have to offer.
Are you kidding me? Daniel Rios is the only player in USL history to have consecutive 20-goal seasons? The only one?
That's correct. Only one.
Oh, my God. That's crazy.
It's
after
elite.
All these clubs. And like, oh, that's amazing.
You
don't get me wrong.
You don't
score
20 goals in USL and sit around for long. People snatch you up.
Yeah, I
know. Yeah,
right?
That's why the club...
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, Mike Jacobs and Gary Smith talked. Mike Jacobs, general manager, and Gary, the coach, in the offseason, last offseason. And Mike said, who's your wish list? Who is your must-have list? And Daniel Rios and Kemp Lancaster were on that list because they each scored 20-plus goals that year. And then Ken Trivett, who's coming up to the MLS squad as well. But Daniel and Cam got signed to MLS contracts last year because – the club said, we know, we want to bring these guys up. They are outliers in this league.
No, absolutely. Don't get me wrong, but I just find it strange. I find it very strange. I mean, like, you know, Charleston Batteries teams, you know, I would always thought there'd be at least be, you know, like one guy to have at least consecutive, you know, at least scoring 20 goals or more, you know, in several seasons. You know, Charleston Battery teams have been incredible, and like, you know, back in the days of the Rochester Rhinos, you would like to think those clubs, even like Pittsburgh Riverhounds, you know, those clubs having the opportunity to have players that are special enough that they go out and they have at least, you know, 20 goals or 20 plus goal seasons there, like two to three straight seasons. I can't believe this is the only guy that's been doing this like on a consistent level.
It's incredible, isn't it? I will admit, I cocked my head at that stat too when I saw it. And double-checked with the team, who was very upfront, said, oh, yeah, that's it. In fact, it was eerie how similar statistically this year was to last for him. Regular season, 20 goals apiece each of those years with a couple assists to boot. Just incredible consistency, and that's what made them look at him, again, this time last year, but throughout the season this season, and say, look, he may not be an everyday starter in MLS, but he's young. He is incredibly consistent and professional, and it's because of his skills away from the ball and his savvy to know where he is on the field that he's able to achieve that kind of success. So, yeah, they love him, and I think with good reason. And he can work his way, I believe, into an everyday starter role. When you look at the legacies of guys, you know, like a Christian Ramirez and what he's been able to do, Tyler Adams, different position, obviously, but guys who played well at the USL level and those skills were projectable, I think he's one of those.
Yeah, I agree with you there. We'll see what happens moving forward. So now we see that the brand new stadium that's going to be built, I don't know if there's still is there still problems from some members of the community that does not want the stadium built in the fairgrounds, or everything's been cleared and off you go for 2022?
Well, it's a very small, very vocal minority that I think is still maybe coming up short of grasping that the improvements that are going to be made to the fairgrounds along with the stadium are going to make this a place where everybody's going to want to go, you know, in Nashville and beyond. It's going to become a destination. In terms of actual, you know, regulatory issues, there's a new mayor. There's been a transition. He's looking at the paperwork. Not a lot the mayor can do. And the mayor has said, I support soccer in Nashville, even if I had questions about the stadium deal and a couple of the things. It's going to happen. There's a mild delay as some of those reviews are going on. But as it stands, Nashville remains scheduled to play 2 years in Nissan Stadium, as has been previously decided, and then to go in that third MLS year into the new stadium. There have been articles, probably sensationalist articles, casting doubt over this. There would have to be a whole lot to happen from a regulatory standpoint to further delay or certainly to erase the possibility of the stadium happening.
No, I agree with you. I think that's the perfect place to put it, to be honest with you. Unless, seeing some pictures on Google Maps, the old ballpark, of course, with the Nashville Sounds, a AAA minor league team that, of course, has that brand new First Tennessee Park that's not far away. But I was thinking, maybe it wouldn't have been that bad to build the stadium at the old site of where the Nashville Sounds used to play to, maybe build it there and not have any issues. But look, the fairgrounds, I think it's also a good location. Why not? I'm not going to challenge it. I think it'll be a very good location. I think it looks like it's a good location. And, let's go for it. Let's get the thing built and let's see what the Nashville SC is going to do with a proper soccer stadium that's going to look great. I mean, have you seen the Lynn Family Stadium over in Louisville? My God, that's looking pretty damn good.
Oh, beautiful. They are doing an awesome job embracing second division soccer and doubling down on that investment. Nashville counts Louisville as a rival. That's probably not going away anytime soon, despite the fact that there'll be different levels. There is undying respect, though, in Nashville for what Louisville has done, and it's certainly just great to see that investment. And similar in Louisville's case to Nashville is in that it's revitalizing a neighborhood. That's what's going to happen with the fairgrounds, and that's why it's, I think, a great deal for Nashville to be putting a stadium here, but the development around that, to see that in Louisville, too, that stadium, I'll tell you what, I will always appreciate and value USL and what it means to U.S. soccer. I need to get to a game there. That's going to be an awesome place.
Yeah, I know. I want to get down there myself. I would love to go check out the brand new place. I know it's going to open sometime in April, I think. But still, though, for Louisville, they had to get out of Louisville Slugger Field. I mean, look, let's be honest. It's been a great temporary place for them. But the truth is, they had to get out of the minor league baseball stadium because it's just not it's just not a fit anymore. I don't have to say it. You can tell, me New York City FC.
I'll say it. Not a great temporary place. It was a temporary place. It was that turf was abysmal. And Louisville supporters need to deserve all the credit in the world. They showed up and they packed it. Baseball stadiums are never ideal. Nashville played one for the last 2 years, and I think did a really good job with the field. I have heard other stories about Louisville, the way they managed that field, the dimensions of it, which is hard to control, but we're below league standards. But then also the turf itself and what they did with that was, I think, criminal to the sport of soccer in some cases, and that's just my opinion there.
It was.
It's not coming from me with the club. But I'm really happy because they deserve better, and they're getting better, and I think this is just going to be an awesome facility for them.
Absolutely, and I can't wait to see what Nashville is going to do in 2020, and, of course, hopefully the schedule will come out and from MLS, and we'll see what goes on. All right, Wes, thank you very much for coming on. Hope to have you on down on the show, back on the show in the future. Good luck next year in MLS, and hope to hear from you again soon. Take care, sir.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
No problem at all. Have a good night. Wes Bowling, Wes Bowling, still at the moment, the radio play-by-play voice of Nashville SC. Of course, they are not officially in MLS yet, but once they get their radio deals and television deals, hopefully Mr. Bowling will be a part of it, and we'll see what happens. But then again, we'll see. Like I said, I'm rooting for him. I hope he gets it because he's a good man. He's been, doing some great work on those streams during the USL championship seasons, of course, going forward. Now, Open Cup qualifying for these amateur sides, you always want to see who's going to make a return, who will continue on in this tournament. At the same time, what new sides are going to be qualifying into the Open Cup. And, with Newtown Pride winning the amateur tournament to get their automatic berth into the 2020 U.S. Open Cup, 12 other sides qualified officially, through the three regions that they represented, one in the East, one in the Central, one in the West, three rounds of qualification to get 12 qualified sides, including or and then adding a 13th, which is, of course, is Newtown Pride, based in Connecticut, in Newtown, Connecticut. And as we go ahead and discuss these games, as I've always been reviewing these scores for Open Cup qualifying to get into the tournament round proper and the round one, first they got to go into the draw bin, and then we'll see who or whom they'll be drawn with starting in 2020. We won't have that until probably sometime next year. I would have to assume maybe either January or February once all the information comes out from U.S. Soccer. But here are the four sides from the East that have qualified. New York Pan Cyprian Freedoms defeating Brockton FC United 1-0. Now, that match ended in the 58th minute. And for the reason why it ended early, and, you know, this is rules from the official handbook of the Open Cup from U.S. Soccer, they already played the opening 45. They already played the opening 45 minutes. And then all of a sudden, because of inclement weather, terrible weather, that made the field unplayable, and the only goal scored was by the New York Pan Cyprian Freedoms. That is why they have advanced into the draw of the first round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup in 2020. So for Brockton FC United, based out of Boston area and the Massachusetts area, tough luck. Sorry about that. And hopefully next year you'll be able to qualify again and go after it. Tough way to go because the match was forced to be ended due to inclement weather because of the torrential rain that Sunday on the 24th, which was yesterday, but still one had to go and one had to stay. So sadly, Brockton United stays home as New York Pan Cyprian Freedoms will advance. Of course, they are the two-time U.S. Open Cup champions back in the day. A big victory in Pennsylvania. I try to pronounce this club properly, so I'm going to try it again. Vereeniging Erzgebirge, based out of Warminster, Pennsylvania. They defeat West Chester United by a final of 2-1. You know, West Chester United, they always find a way to, you know, when they have a strong, solid team, they always find a way to get into the Open Cup and to try to go as deep as they can. Unfortunately, they won't go deep any longer. They will not make it to the draw. So they have been eliminated by Erzgebirge, 2-1. Christos FC are coming back to the dance. They're coming back into the draw, defeating Steel FC by final of 3-2. And then, of course, Virginia United, second consecutive time they've made the Open Cup. They advanced by beating Club Deportivo Huateras 3-1. So your four Eastern representatives, including the automatic bid for Newtown Pride FC from Connecticut, New York Pan Cyprian Freedoms from Queens, New York, Erzgebirge from Pennsylvania in Warminster, Christos FC, of course, from Maryland, and finally Virginia United of Virginia advancing in the Central. Miami United's under-23s, the Miami United from the NPSL league, their under-23 squad, putting a hurting on Hurricane FC, knocking them out. Nashville United Soccer Academy, they also put a hurting on the Soda City Sonics FC. They advance with a 4-0 scoreline. It was one goal that was needed by brand newcomers Louisiana Crew, spelled with a K for Crew, K-R-E-W-E, Louisiana Crew, with a 1-0 victory over Livonia City. And they advanced for the very first time to the Open Cup in the first round draw. And once again, North Texas Rayados taking on Celtic Cowboys Premier. And once again, the Rayados again advancing to the Open Cup. 3-0 victory. In my mind, you always have those legacy clubs in the amateur leagues that have done an amazing job not only dominating in their region or dominating in their state soccer association tournaments, but, you know, qualifying for the Open Cup for the last several years. And that's North Texas Ryados. Give them credit for what they have done. They're becoming like an Agen Hawks. They're becoming like a Lansdowne Boys, you know, Greek-American Atlas, Pan Cyprian Freedoms, even Westchester United. They are now becoming one of those top amateur sides that qualifies for the Open Cup every single year, and what they've done has just been fabulous. Pardon me, just absolutely fabulous. So your four clubs from the Central Region, Miami United under 23 in Florida, Nashville United in Tennessee, Louisiana Crew in Louisiana, and North Texas Ryados in Texas. Now in the West, Olympic Club out of San Francisco defeating Azteca FC 3-1. Harpos comes back into the Open Cup, known as FC Boulder Harpos from Boulder, Colorado. A 4-0 victory over the Colorado Rovers. Cal FC once again, another club that's made noise in this Open Cup. 2-1 victory over Oxnard Guerreros. And then after 2-2 draw through regulation and extra time, Chula Vista edging the LA Monsters FC in penalties 5-4. So once again, Olympic Club out of California from San Francisco, FC Boulders, Harpos representing Colorado, Cal FC, of course, from California, and Chula Vista FC also representing California. So those are the sides advancing into the first round draw of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup for the 2020 edition, the 107th edition of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup in the 2020 season. And what can you say? What can you say? What can you do? All you know is that, once again, it's going to be exciting. You don't know what's going to happen when you have these clubs coming up through the amateur levels, USL League 2, USL League 1, even in the Championship League, we've had amazing matches from the last edition that was played in 2019. This has been incredible. It's been unbelievable. And all I can say is that we are going to see great moments again in the U.S. Open Cup. It's going to be fabulous. It's going to be spectacular. And I cannot wait to see how that first round draw is going to be. I know there's no televised draws until we get to the fourth or fifth round. And, you know, in the court, you know, the fifth rounders, the fourth rounders, the fifth round, the semifinal, whoever's going to host the final. I want to see a draw. I really would love to see a draw for every round. It's not a full blind draw. I truly believe if it's possible, they just televise all rounds drawn. This would make it a lot better, and you won't have so many people assuming that, well, it's not a legit Open Cup because no one's watching the draw. Once again, I've devised a way to get that done. Like I've always said, you're going to have two bowls in the opening early rounds, one, two, three, and four. Leave it the way it is for round five in the quarterfinals. And then, of course, you have the semifinal draw and then, of course, the final draw to determine who gets home field advantage. That's fine. Keep it that way. I think that's even better. But for the opening, like I said, four regional draws, East, Central, South, and West. One bowl determines, you know, which group will be in one bowl. Like, let's say, for the heck of it, USL League 2 is in, the majority of the teams are from USL League 2, that bowl. Another bowl would be NPSL, the amateur clubs. We'll see what happens if the National Independent of American, National Independent Soccer Association clubs will get a sniff of the Open Cup in 2020. We'll have to wait and see for that one. But have like NPSL, NISA, even the amateur clubs in another bowl, one ball drawn per bowl, that's your matchup. If you still want to do coin flips, if whoever wants to do a coin flip for hosting the home game, you can still do that if they wish to do so. But then again, what are you going to do? I just think you have to try and sell it to U.S. Soccer to try and get them to understand this is the better way to do it. At least it's televised. At least everyone sees what you're doing in the early rounds, and we don't have to worry about it. Because if it works like that in England for the FA Cup, then let it work for the U.S. Open Cup, because at least it's televised. I'm not worried about not having people in, you know, soccer fans being in a room that's not a part of the draw. I'm not worried about that. But what I would like to see, so everyone can watch a draw through the course now with ESPN televising every single match of every single round, why not have it drawn in the studios of ESPN? Why not have it drawn, you know, at a live location at Red Bull Arena or at BBVA Compass Stadium or at, you know, let's just say for the heck of it, when Lynn Family Stadium opens in Louisville, you can have the draw there. That's all I'm saying. That's all I think should happen, and that's the end of it. So that's my end of my little rant, of course, with the U.S. Open Cup draw situation. But like I've said already, it's a situation where I think more needs to be done here. The majority of the more has been fixed with ESPN broadcasting every single match of every single round through their streaming platform, which I have, their ESPN Plus streaming platform. It's fantastic. It's wonderful, and I love it. It's just absolutely brilliant. Now, time for a little moment here about on the New York Red Bulls and their roster decisions. Pardon me. First things first, Luis Robles. As difficult of a choice as it was, a difficult decision as it was by the club to not take the option and keep Luis Robles for one more year. And while everyone, you know, everyone supporting the club is having another meltdown, and I'm being kind, while it's sad for me to not see Robles back in a Red Bulls kit, in a goalkeeper kit of the Red Bulls, you know, Ryan Mera is not a bad goalkeeper. Ryan Mera, if you think about it, has already proven himself to win a title. I understand it's the United Soccer League's championship. It's, you know, it's not an MLS Cup, but the point is, he was on a club that won a title back in 2016, defeating Swope Park Rangers at the same time, defeating Orlando City B, Rochester Rhinos, Louisville City, before getting to play against Swope Park Rangers, now going to be renamed Sporting Kansas City 2. Ryan Mera has proven that you can ride on his back and he'll lead you to a cup championship. Ryan Mera, let's not forget, back in 2012 when he was drafted by Hans Bakke, and originally they wanted to bring over Luis Robles, of course, that stupid allocation order crap that the league did, could not have him play for the Red Bulls because Vancouver had the you know first rights when they couldn't get on a deal. Then they had to wait for that time to pass, and they finally got him. But Ryan Mera came straight out of college from Fordham University, the Crestwood, New York native, of course, not far from Yonkers. Ryan Mera has always been a solid goalkeeper, a strong goalkeeper. You know, just because of an injury gave him the bad luck does not mean that he's still terrible. He's still a damn good goalkeeper. Look at the run in the Open Cup that he gave the Red Bulls all the way to the final in 2017, beating New York City FC, beating the Philadelphia Union in penalties, beating the New England Revolution with great goalkeeping. Yes, he got scored on twice by FC Cincinnati, but he was still a part of that team that got into extra time, not just to come back and level the score at 2, go into extra time, getting that big goal from Bradley Wright Phillips to make it 3-2, and then getting into the final. And he deserved to be in that final. Absolutely deserved it. Sure, you wanted Robles because he had more experience, but the truth is you rode the hot hand with Ryan Mera. And Ryan Mera, no matter how much of a job that Luis Robles has done for the Red Bulls, and he deserves a ton of credit for what he has done for the Red Bulls, the truth is this. As great as Luis is, it's time for Ryan Mera to shine. It's time to give him the shot that, let's be honest, he's earned since he was drafted. But because Luis Robles has done a great job being in goal and not giving up the position, Ryan Mera now will get it due to the fact that Dennis Hamlett was forced to make a difficult choice, a very difficult choice, and saying goodbye to Luis to not pick up that option and move on. And I hope for Luis he gets back on his feet. I hope he'll continue to play goal somewhere else, just not DC United. But the truth is that for Luis Robles, we'll see what his future will be if he does decide to call it quits, or maybe he'll play in goal, you know, maybe for either Phoenix Rising of the USL Championship League, or maybe FC Tucson in League One. So we'll see what happens. He may stay in Arizona. He may stay in Arizona permanently and play goal there. I mean, who wouldn't want a hometown hero, or at least a home state hero like Luis Robles over in Arizona? And it's also tough to see Bradley Wright Phillips not being offered another contract. You know, I felt that, and I know everyone said, look, he's getting, you know, he's not the same player as he used to be. And that's not because of age. That's not because he got slower. It's because of an injury that he received. He had a groin issue. Groin issues are the worst injuries anyone can get. It's a tricky injury. You cannot run. You cannot have a burst of speed. You cannot do anything and everything that you were planning to do. Bradley Wright Phillips, I thought he was going to have one, at least maybe another year or two with the Red Bulls. Give him redemption. Give him a redemption year in 2020. If you give Bradley Wright Phillips a redemption year in 2020, he probably would have been back up on top, scoring those goals again. And then you can allow either Tom Barlow or Brian White to get back into the swing of things. The truth is this. Dennis Hamlett believes that the youth movement is now. Dennis Hamlett believes it's time for Tom Barlow and Brian White to get their careers going, because they feel confident in them to go forward. Truthfully, I wish Bradley Wright Phillips would have stayed another year or two. I wished that Dennis Hamlett did keep Bradley, at least at, like, say, hey, listen, this is a redemption year for him. He went out with an injury for no reason. Give Bradley another shot playing up top. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. I think Brian White will have an excellent career. I think Tom Barlow will probably have a better sophomore year. But the truth is, and unfortunately, you know, you're not supposed to lose your job with injury. Score 2 goals in 2019, a couple of assists. But sadly, Bradley Wright Phillips will not be back. And sadly, Luis Robles will not be back. in a Red Bull kit in 2020. We'll see what happens. There's rumors going around that Bradley Wright Phillips is being lured by Plymouth Argyle back in England. Don't know if he has taken that deal, but we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. Luis Robles right now, not even on the re-entry draft list, but BWP is. So it's going to be interesting to see what that situation will entail and how that will move them forward going into next season. Some other moves, of course, that was made. Vincent Bezicourt has been released. One player that I'm a little sad that was released because I liked his game. I know he did well with the Red Bulls too in USL action. He's had some pretty good moments with the main side up top within MLS. Still, it looks like it wasn't enough for him to remain on the main roster. But once again, it's a situation where, look, this is what Dennis Hamlett wanted to do. Wanted to free up some money. So, basically, that's the end of that. So, no more Vincent Bezicourt, no more Marcus Epps, no more Derek Etienne Jr., no more John Christopher Kofi, and no more goalkeeper Evan Luro, who's not staying. He'll probably would have been the backup to Ryan Mera. But then again, we don't know if the Red Bulls are looking for another starting goalkeeper, but they feel that it's time for Ryan Mera's opportunity. He's been patient enough as it is. And we'll see what happens there. And now new information comes out from Ives Gallersep of Soccer by Ives that Kamar Lawrence has been asking for a trade because I guess, and I want to make sure I get the correct story here of what's going on with Kamar Lawrence. New York Rebels are already in the midst of the transformative offseason after the departures of Luis Robles and Bradley Wright Phillips, says he probably wants to be traded by the Red Bulls. And from the article written by Ives himself, he's requested a trade from the Red Bulls, a move that came after the club it refused to request to negotiate his contract. Sources confirmed to SBI Lawrence signed a contract extension with the Red Bulls late in 2018 in the MLS season, and which made him the highest paid defender on the team at the time and projected to make him one of the highest paid fullbacks in MLS. And that changed dramatically shortly after he signed, though, with the Red Bull Central Defenders. With Red Bull Central Defenders Aaron Long and Tim Parker, both signing lucrative new deals in 2019, paying each of them almost double what Lawrence is due to make. So there you have it. And he's behind the likes of Jorge Villafana, Brad Smith, and Ronald Matarita, as well as the Vancouver Whitecaps defender Ali Adnan, who signed a league-high deal paying him $1.2 million in 2019, almost three times more than the $383,000 Lawrence made in 2019. My opinion is this, and, you know, there were rumors going around that, you know, the Red Bulls were looking for a left fullback, I would think for cover, but let me just say this. I think with, you know, some, you know, the Red Bulls said, you know, Dennis Hamlett said in his, you know, last, you know, in his, you know, the media day interview that they have money to spend now. Depending on what the salary cap situation is, I think it would be fair to re-sign Kamar Lawrence. I think he deserves the money that he deserves. I mean, you know, that's a back line right now that is really, really strong. A back line that will have Michael Murillo as right fullback, Tim Parker, Aaron Long as your center backs, left back right now. Currently, as the way it looks at the moment, until unless they do accept Taxi's wishes. Right now, this back line's intact until Kamar Lawrence does get traded or something else happens that I hope does not happen, but still, though, it's a situation where it's tough to see a back line that is not intact. So we'll see what happens moving forward, and we'll see what the situation will be for this New York Red Bull side. So at the moment, here is your 21-man roster currently on the New York Red Bulls. Goalkeeper is Ryan Mara. Yes, they have Reese Buckmaster, Kyle Duncan, Kamar Lawrence right now, Aaron Long, Michael Murillo, Sean Nealis, Tim Parker, and Amro Tarek. Your midfielders are going to be Christian Caceres Jr., Sean Davis, Omir Fernandez, Kaku, Ben Mines, Alex Mouille, Danny Royer, Mark Schakowsky, Florian Vallot. And your strikers right now, your forwards, will be Tom Barlow, Brian White, and the Danish superstar currently still on Red Bulls 2. We'll see what happens in the future. But Matthias Jorgensen is on this club. Now, obviously, Josh Sims' loan is over, and he went back to Southampton. But through the conference call we had about with the media, Red Bulls are still having conversations with Southampton. I think Josh Sims wants to come back to the New York Red Bulls. He wants to come back to MLS, and he finally got rewarded by scoring his first goal with the club in the playoffs at Philadelphia, which, you know, he was just unbelievable in that match. He's been great since he came over. Fantastic crosses, setting up goals, you know, finally got rewarded by scoring a goal himself in the playoffs. What he could do and what he can bring to the New York Red Bulls in 2020 in the midfield along the right side, I think would be an asset to the New York Red Bulls. You'll have Royer on the left. You'll have Sims on the right. You'll have Kaku in the middle. And that would be a great attacking midfield. That would be, in my mind, that would be unbelievable to see what can happen for the New York Red Bulls if they can keep Kamar Lawrence and give him the money. I think, I believe Kamar Lawrence is worth the money that, you know, he deserves. I think the Red Bull should give Kamar Lawrence the money that he deserves. Because why? Because I think finally in 2019, not saying he's not a bad, you know, left back. I'm not saying he's a bad wing back, but to see his emotions on the pitch, to see how he was talking to the media, you know, at training, after wins, at Red Bull Arena or away from Red Bull Arena, there was more confidence in him. There was more purpose. There was more desire. I'm not saying he didn't have it, but what I'm saying is there was more coming out of it. He was hungry. He was determined. He wanted to be out there, and he wanted to go out and perform at a very high level, more higher than ever. And you know what? I think it would be a shame if the Red Bulls allowed him to get his wish for a trade. I think he deserves that money. I think he should get that money. That's just my opinion, of course. Obviously, the Red Bulls have a different belief. We'll see what happens. I think that they should really think about this hard. I think Dennis Hamlet, in all honesty, should give Kamar Lawrence what he deserves. I think he deserves to have the money. You have that back line intact for the next several years. You've locked up that back line. Time to go for it. Time to give him what, you know, what he is due, and I believe that the Red Bulls should do it. Unless there's cracks in his game next year, up until this point, let him do it. Give him the money. It's time that the Red Bulls just make sure that back line is secure. Caceres Jr. has done a great job replacing Tyler Adams since he was transferred to Red Bull Leipzig. Obviously, the groin issue that he had kept him out, but still, though, once again, to give him an opportunity to go out and do some damage again. So that's my opinion about Kamar Lawrence. He should stay, in my opinion. They should not trade him. They should give him the money that he wants to be a high paid left back. I think he deserves it. But until then, we'll have to wait and see what will happen here. But, you know, for myself personally, when it comes to what's been going on in my life, I've had a horrible 2019. I was gutted, absolutely gutted that I could not make the trip to Philadelphia for the playoff match. I could not cover the team in one of the most important matches of 2019, and that is, of course, taking on the Philadelphia Union down at Talon Energy Stadium. I couldn't go. I was very gutted I couldn't go. And, you know, but I had my health was at risk, and I had to do what I had to do. I had to stay home, watch the match from home. And all I can say is that I am, first of all, I'm always happy and proud to cover this team for you Red Bull supporters. My fellow friends from the South Ward, of course, formerly in the South Ward, formerly in the seats at Giant Stadium. It's an honor and a pleasure to be covering this club for you guys. Having a lot of, sadly, family issues, personal issues regarding my health. And, of course, with the passing of my father has really taken a toll on me. It has really been difficult for me to go through life now. And I know this is, you know, the circle of life. All of us are not going to be over 100 plus years old and still continue on another 100 years and stuff. And we're not Time Lords, being a Doctor Who fan. We're not, sadly, we are, you know, we cannot regenerate our bodies to, you know, keep living and everything. I wish I could, but we can't. But once again, it's been a very difficult year for me in 2019. But I am grateful to have not just Red Bull fans that follow my coverage on Once a Metro, covering the New York Red Bulls, but I'm also grateful for all of you that listen to the 4-Teams Fire American Soccer Show, and you give me your time, whether it's live or the repeat shows, the archived shows, that you give me your time, your ears, to discuss American soccer, which I try not to pull the wool over your eyes. I try to give you honest coverage, good coverage, hard-nosed coverage about the game in this country. You may pull the wool over your eyes. You will get what you'll get because this is the same type of thing you want. Try my best for you. And once again, I am fortunate enough to have wonderful colleagues in this industry. Sadly, there'll be those that are a little, but you know, that comes with the territory, I guess. But other than that, I hope you've enjoyed my shows. We're gonna have some very good shows down the road. And let's get ready for 2020. Still got some shows left to do in 2019. And we're going to try and give you a taste of everything going forward. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say thank you to my guests. Of course, Michael Ander of Blue City Radio, covering New York City FC. Could not come on live, but we recorded this show. Thank God. I also want to thank Wes Bowling down in Nashville, Tennessee, who is the radio play-by-play voice of Nashville SC until
they move into MLS. So we'll see what happens there. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please, I beg of you, please enjoy your football. Thank you very much, everyone. I hope you're all well. Take care. So long. And bye-bye for now. Once again, let me congratulate real quickly Newtown Pride FC, New York Pan Cyprian Freedoms, Erzgebirge, Christos FC, Virginia United, Miami United Under 23s, Nashville United, Louisiana Crew, and North Texas Riados, Olympic Club, FC Boulder Harpos, Cal FC, and Chula Vista FC into the Open Cup. Have a good night, everybody. Take care, so long, and bye-bye for now.